This is The Blade and Beyond with the DC Dynamic Duo. Learn every detail about life on both ends of the knife. And now, live from Washington, D.C., your hosts, board-certified plastic surgeons, Dr. Michael Somanik and Dr. Troy Pittman.
Good morning, everybody. It is Monday, November 29th, and it's your birthday.
It is my birthday. So thank you, Stevie, for wishing me a happy birthday. And all the people that have texted me this morning, it is still a little early, and I've gotten a plethora of texts. So I'm very excited and happy to see that I'm loved.
I am Dr. Troy Pittman. Welcome to The Blade and Beyond.
And I'm Dr. Michael Somanik.
So we have been in Miami this weekend. We're going back to DC later this afternoon. We've been celebrating your birthday, and it's been fun, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been great. Last time we were here, it basically rained the entire time. So I was so happy to see that every day has been just like sun, no clouds, the most beautiful weather. So it couldn't have been a better weekend to celebrate my birthday.
You want to talk about a little bit of what we did with our friends?
Yeah, we went to this amazing restaurant on Saturday night that was like an omakase 21-course pop-up restaurant for sushi. And it was delightful. They're based out of Aspen. And what's kind of cool is that the team of like probably 8 or 10 people, they literally shut the restaurant down in Aspen. They come down to Miami. They work for about 6 weeks in this pop-up, and then they go back to Aspen and they kind of hop back and forth. So it's exciting to take advantage of it while they're here because they're truly artists on what they do. And I thought it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience with them.
Yeah, it was great. And yesterday we went out on our friend Danny Carriega's boat. Danny's a plastic surgeon here in Miami. Great guy. Had some friends in from out of town, and we had really a true Miami boat day, which was great.
Yeah, which is always kind of hit or miss with me because when I look at a wave, I get seasick. So
you were getting a little green toward the end.
Towards the end. But we were out there for about 6 hours, and I hung in there. So the waves were very low, and it wasn't a very windy day. So I had such a good time. And that's why we have friends with boats, and we don't own a boat. So I'm not throwing up all the time.
It's always better to have a friend with a boat than have your own boat.
Yes, absolutely.
And it is also kind of a little bit of a sad weekend because musical theater writer Stephen Sondheim passed away. He was 91 years old. And it's very sad for a lot of people who really grew up, much like I did, with Stephen Sondheim music and doing musicals that he wrote. And he really kind of wrote the soundtrack for a lot of people's lives, and he's going to be sorely missed.
Yeah, I mean, we've been together for 15 years. I wasn't a very musical person prior to meeting you, other than playing a musical instrument, but like musical theater. And, you know, so I'm familiar with Sondheim, but, you know, for those that don't really know who he is or what he's done or very limited knowledge of him, I mean, why don't you tell people kind of why he's important to the theater community?
Well, I mean, you know, he wrote the lyrics for West Side Story. That was one of his first big professional jobs. And then...
Which is being re-released, like, next week by Steven Spielberg in a movie.
And, you know, for me, the first musical that I did in college in the conservatory was Into the Woods. He wrote that, Sunday in the Park with George. I mean, I think I've been in most Sondheim musicals that everyone knows of. One of the things that everyone had been texting us when we said, what do you want to hear in our podcast? A lot of people said, we want to hear more personal stories. And so we're going to take a little bit of a turn this week and talk about what our jobs were before we were doctors.
Yes, there is no plastic surgery talk this week. It's all about... Yes, what we've done prior to medicine. And I think some people are going to be surprised what you did before you went into medicine. So, I mean, let's start. I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but I mean, you kind of were an actor before medicine.
I was absolutely an actor. So I went to a conservatory in North Carolina called Elon. It was Elon College then, now it's Elon University, but they were a liberal arts college where they had an acting and music conservatory, and they also had liberal arts things. So I kind of made this deal with my parents that I was going to be pre-med, but I was also going to do theater, and I got a theater scholarship. And so about 6 months into college, I started realizing that it was much more fun to go to my voice lesson than it was to go to my biology class. And so I sat my parents down and I said, I don't want to do pre-med anymore. I'm going to be an actor.
And what did they say?
Well, they reacted just like you would think a parent would react, with absolute horror. But really, my dad said something that was really poignant. He said, get all of this acting out of your system. You don't always want to go through life wondering what it would have been like to study acting, and you can always go back to pre-med. And I thought that was a pretty...
forward thinking.
Yeah, that was a mindset. Pretty generous thing for my parents to really support me with that. And so when I graduated from college, I really wanted to go to Boston to study with an opera coach named Walter Boyce at Boston Conservatory. So I went to Boston Conservatory for 6 months. And while I was at the conservatory in Boston, I auditioned for a musical review called Forbidden Broadway, which, for those of you that are real theater fans, you know what Forbidden Broadway is, but it's basically an off-Broadway show that's a spoof of Broadway shows. And lo and behold, I got cast to do the Japanese tour of this musical.
Oh my God, your parents must have been like, where are we going with this?
So here I was, I left Boston Conservatory, and I was on a plane to Tokyo. And for 6 months, I toured Japan. So we went to Tokyo and Osaka and Nagoya and Narita and did Forbidden Broadway.
Did you learn any Japanese?
I learned how to say break a leg and thank you and please. I was a very polite Japanese
speaker. So you were functional.
As functional as I could be. And then when Japan was over, I moved to New York City and really started my professional acting career. I did Forbidden Broadway off Broadway, and then got cast in the national tour of the Broadway revival of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Which was probably like the time of your life. I mean, you probably thought you hit it big.
Yeah, I mean, I was 22 years old and got a ticket to travel to every major city in the United States. And I did that for a little over a year. And
did you travel on a bus?
We split. We went halftime on a bus. If the cities were close together, so if it was like Miami to Fort Lauderdale, we would travel on a bus. And then if it was like Miami to Los Angeles, we would travel on a plane.
Was it like a rock star bus?
It wasn't. It was like a Greyhound bus.
Oh, God.
But I negotiated in my contract that I would have two seats. Instead of having like someone sitting right next to me, I'd have a double seat so I could kind of lay down if I wanted to take a nap.
Oh, you were a diva early on. Okay.
So that was an amazing experience because I saw the whole country. And it really taught me that growing up in the Northeast, we kind of live in a bubble. When you go through the middle of the country and you see the country, it definitely teaches you a lot about people.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine seeing all these movies with like actors waiting in line for hours to try out, only to sing like two lines for them to say like, thank you, bye, and never get a call back. I mean, what was your most challenging job as an actor when you were in the biz?
Well, it is exactly like it looks on TV, except that when you line up at the Actors Equity Building, which is the big building where they have auditions, you have to get in line and you have to sign up. So in order to get a reasonable sign-up time, you have to be there at about 4:30 in the morning. So I would wake up, put on my pajamas and my coat, and I would go wait outside of this building at 4:30 in the morning just to sign up. So by about 8 o'clock in the morning, I would get a sign up time. I would go back to my apartment and then I would warm up and I would get dressed and I would shower and get ready for my audition just to go back to the building to audition.
Oh my God. So like it's a like a full-time job just auditioning.
It's a full-time job just auditioning. And then at night when I wasn't working, I helped one of my friends run their restaurant. The most challenging job that I had as an actor was I did the off-Broadway production of La Cage aux Folles, which, for those of you that don't know what that is, it's basically the stage version of the movie The Birdcage. And I was one of the cagels, one of the dancers in the club. And I had to dance in high heels. I had to tap dance in high heels, and I had to do a cartwheel in high heels. And I had never done any of those things.
And did you tell them you did when you auditioned?
I was like, oh, sure, I can, of course I can tap dance.
I can do anything.
Yeah, I can tap dance and do cartwheels and high heels. And I had to learn how to do that. And it was certainly challenging, but a testament to you just kind of, as an actor, you just kind of make it work and you do what you need to do to perform.
Yeah, I'm sure you had a lot of side gigs making extra money. So you had to have had like a worse job while you were working in New York City that was either related to acting or not?
Yeah, my worst job in New York City was I was a perfume model at Macy's in Herald Square.
Model.
So you know when you're going through the you're going through kind of the cologne department at Macy's or any department store, there's the person that's standing there with the perfume and the little ticket.
Oh, you're the one I always feel bad saying no to.
Yeah, so I sold Nicole Miller perfume. So it was like, would you like to try Nicole Miller? Would you like to try Nicole today? Would you like to try Nicole Miller? All day long.
Ugh.
And you go home at night and you smell like you are wearing 20 perfumes because you've been sprayed with perfume all day long. And you're trying to like not assault people by spraying it on them. But that was the worst job that I had.
Well, how long did you do it for?
Probably for about 2 weeks. And then I just couldn't take it anymore. But I made $50 an hour. And so,
which was pretty good.
For like a 22-year-old in New York City, $50 an hour was like someone was paying me $1,000 an hour.
Right, of course.
So I tried to stick it out as much as I could. But I think I was actually developing some kind of lung disease from all of this perfume. And I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Thank God you only put in 2 weeks. So, okay. So you did acting. You were a perfume model. You were working in a restaurant. When
all of the tools needed to go to med school.
So, I mean, when did you decide you wanted to go to med school?
So I was doing a play called Forbidden Broadway in Niagara Falls, New York. And that was, I just really started thinking, what do I want in my life? Do I really want to be at the building at 4:30 in the morning auditioning? And I wanted to do something else, and I thought that I had it in me to do something more considerable, and decided that I was going to return to pre-med, but that meant going back to college. And so I got back to New York City and I went to NYU and I said, I want to do pre-med classes, but I also, NYU is incredibly expensive. And I said, I don't really have any science skills, because they said, well, you can pay for part of your way through by being a TA. And I was like, well, I can't really TA anything scientific.
A teacher's assistant.
Yeah, because I don't know anything. And I said, but I do know performing. So I will work as a TA in the Tisch School of the Arts with the musical theater students. And so I basically did musical theater stuff for Tisch School of the Arts until I knew enough science to be a graduate level TA.
That's a good deal to broker. Probably most people couldn't do that today, I feel.
And so I paid my way through pre-med. I took all of the classes and took the MCAT and then went to medical school.
So you went to medical school. We both went to medical school. How do you think being a musician? So I'm going to give a little background that I played the violin for about 10 years. So I was a musician in my own right.
Oh, are we bringing it back to you?
We're
already
not bringing it back to me. However, I'm just saying, because in framing my question, I think we both can contribute a little bit to this answer, because I was just thinking, how do you think being a surgeon, since we both are surgeons, is like being a musician?
Yeah, I mean, the most common question I get is, oh my God, it must have been so crazy going from being an actor to being a med student.
Because you can also play the piano. So you are, I mean, a musician as well.
And so, you know, it's interesting because I talked to a lot of surgeons who played musical instruments. And I think that one of the things that you learn with playing instruments is discipline. Because you don't just sit down and start playing arias at the piano or on the violin. you have to practice, and you need to kind of play a little bit of scales, then you play a little more scales and you practice, then one day you're sitting down and you're playing a whole song. And being a surgeon is very similar to that, in that you don't walk up the first day and know how to take out someone's gallbladder, or do a facelift or a breast reduction. You learn those little steps. There is no immediate gratification. It's hard. You have to practice. And then one day you're actually doing these operations and you realize, oh my God, this is the culmination of learning all of these little baby steps. And so I think that playing an instrument, or, you know, being an athlete, all of those things really can prepare you for a life in medicine. So it's not really a far jump.
Yeah, I think discipline is a huge one with being a musician. The other thing I think about, particularly with a stringed instrument, but this can apply to really so many other the wind instruments as well, is the fine tuning. Like the difference between mm-hmm. placing your finger a millimeter can make a note sharp or flat.
Mm-hmm.
And so that fine tune movement that you develop with your hands is very applicable as a surgeon.
Yeah, that's hand-eye coordination.
Yes.
Where you're reading music and doing something different with your hands.
Yeah, and as a facial plastic surgeon, like, I'm working on tiny things all the time. I'm not a microsurgeon, so I'm not operating under a microscope, but I am operating on like smaller things.
Well, you are in a sense operating under a microscope, because patients are looking at themselves in a microscope or a mirror sometimes, and it is almost like being under a microscope.
Yeah, I'm still dealing with people wanting the difference of like millimeters. So I'm still dealing with flat or sharp notes.
Yeah, you know, and I do think being an actor, I use the skills that I learned as a performer every single day as a doctor. You know, being able to do a presentation or a lecture, I don't get stage fright. I'm comfortable speaking in front of people. I know how to make eye contact with people when I walk into a room. And you would be surprised. I mean, I know you know this, mm-hmm. but how many doctors walk into a room and they can't make direct eye contact with patients? And it's super weird for the patient. And so being able to just walk into a room with a complete stranger and develop rapport with them and strike up a conversation is absolutely something I learned as an actor.
For sure, for sure. I think I've just always had the extrovert personality to talk to people based on the ability of my parents to chat away anyone. So I developed that ability early on.
Okay, so let's talk about you. Let's bring it back to you because it is your birthday. Let's talk about your jobs, because you had a lot of them. Let's talk about your jobs before going to med school.
Oh my God, my experience is so different than yours. I did not have a career prior to medicine. I, you know, started working at an early age, getting side jobs to make extra money. You know, I come from a very blue collar family where we have a very strong work ethic, and like a good Eastern European family. Mm-hmm. So I got a job when I was 15 at PetSmart. And for those of you that don't know, I mean, I love animals, all kinds, all types. I've always had a passion for animals, still do. And so PetSmart was such a logical first job for me. So I'm like, great, oh my God, I can work with the pets. And they threw me in the fish department, which was really good because I had a 50-gallon fish tank at that time. And I just would like really take pride in our fish tank at home, and I took care of it. And there's a whole lot. We could do another podcast.
But you were a fish sales, selling fish at PetSmart.
But then, you know, I was also sort of in charge of the birds. And there was like an African gray, which is a little bit of a larger bird that I would take out after we closed, and he would sit on my shoulder while I cleaned up, and I really developed a relationship with him. And never bought the bird, which I kind of regret because I really was like, oh my God, he can't go somewhere else. But that's just something that, you know, goes down in my history books. And then, so I did PetSmart, and then I went to college, actually. I stuck at PetSmart during my entire high school time. And then once I went to college, I obviously didn't work while I was in college because I devoted so much time to my pre-med courses and all of that. And then
I'm trying to get this mental picture of you with your little high school mullet, your side spike, kind of a flock of seagulls hairstyle.
I got rid of the mullet by then.
At PetSmart in your PetSmart apron.
Well, red shirt with a red polo. And they did provide us back support, those straps that give you back support. So it was an outfit. And we all looked the same.
Okay, so let's talk about the worst job that you had.
Yeah, so on my summers from college, you know, I had to make the money that I would use throughout the year at school so I could support myself. And, you know, I worked at a greenhouse during the day, kind of organizing shipments to Home Depot. But then at night on Fridays and Saturdays, I got a little side gig at a banquet hall where I was a server for weddings, bat mitzvahs, you name it. So I would come home from the greenhouse, get home by 5:30, shower, get changed into my tuxedo and go to the banquet hall. And it was a very demanding job and very high stress because, and I will always have respect for these servers at large banquets because, you know, it's timed very closely, like when the food comes out, when things are delivered. And you kind of take it for granted because you're talking to people when you're at one of these functions and not really paying attention to the server. But when that food is ready on the line, it needs to be plated, put on the tray, and delivered to the tables in like less than 4 minutes. So
I'm imagining at a banquet with like 10 people or 8 people at a table, you're carrying like 8 or 10 salads on one of those giant trays.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the salads weren't, they're all stressful because you're carrying this tray of all this food. And, you know, if you trip or tilt your forearm or something, all the entire platter will go flying either on guests or on the floor. Either way, you're kind of screwed.
Did you ever drop
one? Never. Thank God I never dropped one. But it's even harder with the entrees because they're heavier. They're all like ready to go and they're much more difficult to manage than salads.
What would happen to you if you dropped it?
You'd probably get fired. I think somebody did drop a tray once and the chef was like, everyone was very scared of him.
I think you told me you got yelled at a lot at this job.
I didn't get yelled at a lot, but I did get yelled at a few times because, you know, I was a beginner. I wasn't the seasoned banquet veteran walking that had been working there for 15, 20 years. I was working there on a summer. So, and by the way, I felt like it looks like we're all a team, but like, I didn't really feel like we were such a huge team. So it was definitely one of the worst jobs I had. But I, you know what? I stuck with it the whole summer because I made good money. It was 2 days a week. And by the time I was done on Saturday nights, I would go out with my friends.
So that was the worst job. What was the most challenging job you had before medicine?
Yeah. So I alluded to the fact that I worked at a greenhouse. So I got this as a temp at my first summer from college. I was like, what am I going to do? I'm not going back to PetSmart. I've moved on. And so I called this temp agency. They paired me up at this greenhouse. And it was honestly ended up being like one of the best jobs I had because this greenhouse specifically sold perennials that shipped to all of the Home Depots in the Midwest, you know, where I was from in Chicago. So I took on the role of basically organizing all of the trucks that were delivering
to
the Home Depot. So there was like a slew of about 6 or 8 trucks per week that would come in. I would organize their trips, the stops, as well as how the flowers were loaded onto the truck. Because, you know, they have to be loaded in order. You can't put...
What kind of order?
Like, you can't put the last stop all the way in the front.
Oh, so you have to do like Omaha.
So it has to be exactly. So, and you know, it has to be temperature controlled. The plants have to be watered beforehand. And so there was so much detail involved in this job, but I loved everyone I worked with. And I learned so much about perennials. Till this day, I can give anyone some guidance on gardening and landscaping in your yard.
And I think if it's a perennial. What's so funny is you love gardening and you love animals. And do you think did those jobs really suit you? Or do you think that those jobs taught you to love those things?
No, they were both individual passions of mine before I got into them. Like I loved animals before I worked for PetSmart. That's why I applied for it. And you know, my grandpa always kind of taught me gardening skills. I was gardening with my grandpa ever since I was a kid. So it was all sort of weird, serendipitous, natural progressions with these jobs. And the greatest thing about it is that my second year, they asked me back behind the temp agency's back. Hopefully the temp agency isn't listening. And they offered me $2 more an hour, which I thought I was a millionaire at that point. I'm like, I'm going to get an extra $2 more an hour. every week, which is like amazing. I'm gonna have so much more money next year.
Oh my God, I love it. So how do you think that all of your jobs prepared you for medicine?
Well, I think that the greenhouse specifically, you know, organization, that was huge. And, you know, our lives are incredibly organized. You like to say, sometimes I'm a little disorganized, but I always know where I'm supposed to be, even if it's just 5 minutes beforehand. And the attention to detail. I mean, those things are extremely important in what we do.
For sure.
And I mean, specifically plastic surgery, but I mean, just starting medicine. You got to be organized. You have to be disciplined. You really have to have attention to detail, or else you are not going to succeed in this field or this profession.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting because there were a lot of people, I'm sure same thing with you, there were a lot of people in med school who had never had a job. I mean, they went from high school to college to med school, and they saw med school as kind of an extension of just college. And I think when you have a job that you have to wake up and you have to be at and you're responsible for, it makes med school, I think, a lot more tolerable because you're waking up. And I mean, I had been out of school for 6 years when I went to med school. And for me, going to med school and going to lecture and then going into the third year of med school where we were going into the hospital, that was just like a job. And so I never cut class. I always went to lectures because I felt like this is my job that I'm going to. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I did. And yes, because I had just been a hard worker on so many levels, mm-hmm. not just in school, but outside of school my whole life. So it was such a natural progression. Yes. Medical school was a hell of a lot harder than college, but you kind of persevered and got through it, and we had the skills to succeed, and it worked for us.
Yeah, so for everybody listening out there, if your children are not going into medicine or law or getting their MBA right now, there is hope, even if they're studying the violin, that yes. they're learning discipline. It's
or if all they, about discipline. If they want to go into medicine, get them a job at PetSmart. Obviously, there's a high success rate with that. So,
all right. So that is our personal stories. I hope you guys really enjoyed hearing about that. And if you didn't, we'll be talking about plastic surgery again
we'll
next
be back
week.
To the, yes.
So you're headed to New York at the end of the week.
I am headed to New York City. I'm very excited. So as you all know, I do trainings and seminars across the country. And this weekend is going to be held in New York City with an all-star cast of colleagues and physicians. There's four of us from around the country that are going to be there teaching and educating a lot of the New York City, Manhattan, Brooklyn, and other areas, New Jersey, the injectors in that area, about some of the latest and greatest in the injectable industry. So I am very excited about that, to see some of the colleagues and also, you know, be back to teaching and see the city.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to doing the senior residence conference for the Aesthetic Society this weekend. It's where people who are just gone into practice or graduating residents who are about to go into practice, they learn about the business of plastic surgery. And that's always a really fun meeting to be part of. And
yes,
then
yes, I'm
the
flying
biggest,
back from New York City.
Drum roll, please.
On Sunday. Hopefully that flight's on time. I swear to God, American Airlines, we're going to the Kennedy Center Honors.
Which is amazing. I mean, I've probably gone my whole life wanting to go to the Kennedy Center Honors, and Bette Midler is being honored.
Lauren Michaels.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to just being there and seeing the celebration. And so next week, we will definitely give you an update on the Kennedy Center Honors, because I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be an experience. It's going to be a lot of celebrities. So I don't think I'm going to have pictures of any of them, because I don't think that's kind of taboo.
Yeah,
so we're going to act professional, as much as I'm going to be like fangirling inside, being like, hi, Tina Fey, because I know she's going to be there. But anyway, we will update you on all of that next week on the podcast.
Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
That's a wrap. Remember to share the podcast with your friends. Follow the docs on Instagram at SominicMD, at Dr. Troy Pittman, and at DC Dynamic Duo. To learn more about the procedures discussed on today's podcast, visit www.SominicPittmanMD.com. That's www.SominicPittmanMD.com.